This is Aaron Meza, and you're listening to Talking Schmidt, Big Schmitty Nights.
Hey.
Talking Schmidt.
I'm already not watching.
It's cool, like tonight is the night.
Damn, this is like the coolest thing I'm ever gonna do.
I wouldn't say it was fun.
What do you mean? Well, Christian Fletcher's younger brother.
Fuck the Dodgers.
Our big dog's in. What do you think, Dolan?
John Schmidt.
Talking Schmidt.
Alpha Macaroni.
Most of these guys, their opinion don't matter.
Talking Schmidt, right?
It's skateboarding.
I remember that.
Talking Schmidt.
What are Yuns doing?
Holy shit.
Skateboarding homies.
No, Schmidt, you can't jump in.
What is happening?
I'm here for Greg Smith. Yay!
Gregory.
Yes, we are.
Wi-Fi check one, Wi-Fi check two.
Were you on stage with the Sodi party?
Yeah.
How's that?
It was fun. Like, that was probably only the second. I went to Solomon's. That was the first one I went to, was Solomon's.
Me too, with the mini ramp.
Yeah. I broke my ankle on that mini ramp like a week later.
Oh.
Yeah, we heard Mike. Unless I have this wrong. Okay, there's that kind of famous photo of everybody out at Wallenberg. It's at Wallenberg, but it's like that famous posse photo of like Carol at Bryce Shaw. It's like Carol, Ben Sanchez, York, maybe Huff. You know, that's kind of famous photo.
Maybe Chico.
Sort of famous. Yeah, Chico, maybe Shamil, Marcus or something.
Mm-hmm.
So that day we all were at Wallenberg that day. Mike York's holding my camera, like looking through the camera. And I remember Bryce like, let's get a quick photo of everybody. You know what I mean? And I swear I think that day is the same. That night was the Sodi party, I feel like.
Oh, really?
And I feel like Mike might have heard about being Sodi either that day or just the day before. I'm almost positive.
So they didn't announce it beforehand?
They kind of surprised him? I mean, I think they just called him up.
Yeah,
I think Greg Hunterson was like, dude, I think Carol just won Skate of the Year. I heard he won. And somehow we all, I think we might have even known that day. We all went to Wallenberg, and I think we might have known already that he won. And we just went there that night. Mike was just starting to drink a little bit, and he was like very nervous in front of a crowd. So I think his strategy was just get hammered, and they just started calling everybody's name to come on stage. But I remember I was up there, and I was like, dude, there was like 30 of us already on there. I was like, dude, you got to call. I was like, call your girl. Her name was Aaron, actually, at the time. I was like, you got to say Aaron. I think he kept saying me. I think he was drunk. I think he thought I was talking about myself. But I was like, bring Aaron up here. Your girlfriend's still on the crowd. You got like everybody else up here. You better call her name, dude. You got to get in trouble. I remember that. And I remember actually I was actually super hyped. I was just starting to know Jake that year, actually.
Mm.
And, he just did one of his like off the cuff speeches. He's like, I don't care who you are. And he named a few names, and he named my name. He's like, Mesa. And I was so like, it made me feel so good. You know how Jake had that thing where like he can make you feel like,
yeah,
top of the world or like the lowest of the lowest. At that time, it was all highs for me at that time. So it was still like, I was still like just getting to know him. But like, I was just so like flattered. He even like threw my name out there, like in his little intro speech.
Sick.
Yeah, it was probably like kind of a diss too, but I was just so stoked, like, whoa, this dude's rad.
When you started skating with all the, you know, you're filming all the big dogs, do you ever revisit some of the, you know, the Library Banks or any of these old spots? Did you ever see anything go down that was phenomenal at a spot that you never saw anything good? I mean, quads, right?
Quads, I don't know if I ever went there to film, to be honest. We went there as quads came a little bit later even for us, like maybe the tail end of high school.
Okay.
I remember people started going back there, but I don't think it was really hard to get anybody to leave the city, to be honest.
Yeah, it's true.
I was like, they would like South City was like out of state, like to them. A lot of them didn't have cars. Even if I wanted to drive, they're kind of like, just skate here. Like it's better, you want to take them to some terrible ledge in like Belmont or like, or they have brown marble right there. Like,
yeah,
you
know? That's true.
So, yeah, but one thing like a little bit later, I think I'm pretty positive I took Drehobel to the pyramids, the Library Banks.
Oh, really?
With Salva, with Greg. And I actually also took him to the San Bruno Banks I was talking about, the Pyrolators. And he did some stuff there that was just like, I swear, I think Chernobyl, I might have photos at Thrasher or here somewhere. Like something you would never think of. He might have aired over the top of the pyramid, like bank to bank.
Okay.
Something crazy.
Phil did that. And McKinney skated it really good too.
Yeah.
Like I was tripping because I didn't know those dudes yet when I went there for the first time. So we were just like, you know, getting our little carves or whatever. Yeah. And then they were doing transfers. And I was like,
I mean, it was hard to get speed at that spot. Like it was really, there was a big bench in the way. There was this boys club contest. But my friends, Dave and Alberto, they went to the, they just had a hunch. They went to, they followed people to the library banks and Fedge and Tommy and them skated the banks.
Ooh.
Something you would never realize, but there was a hip because Tommy, like, they're like, dude, Tommy would come from the street all the way up the curb and hit this hip. And at that line to us, even though now it'd be so obvious, but we were just like, whoa, like he ollied up first. Like, that's so quick, even though it was probably like 8 feet or longer. Like,
yeah.
We couldn't believe that, that like, you know, we were just, you know, you're just blown away when you see people's lines that are like really know how to skate. We were just like, whoa. And it's funny, my friend Chad, who lived in that neighborhood, he was like, dude, I met this dude there. He like works for Thrasher or something. We're like, what? Like, he gave me a Thrasher magazine. It was Keith Cochran.
Shout out.
He's like, they're like, his name was Keith and he met us there. Like, he was cool to us. He gave us a magazine. And like, so there's like little things like that, like went like a long way. Like, you know, those are like big, big time moments for us, you know, at the time.
Was the FTC video, did they premiere it at Lake Merced?
That was the second one. We did a premiere at the Boathouse.
Was that sick?
It was sick. Yeah, it was fun. It was like small time, but like, yeah, it was cool. It was fun. My parents actually came. I think that was the first time my parents were kind of like, oh, I think we sort of understand what you're doing here, I guess. You know what I mean? It kind of made a little bit more sense to them. I was still like in college at that time, so I was kind of juggling stuff, but I think for them to see everybody like having a good time and clapping and stuff.
When girl starts, is that kind of like how much of you moving down south is like premeditated versus like were you thinking about that, or was it like girls down there, we gotta go?
I mean, it took a while because I mean, it took years. It took like, it was probably like 4 years after girls started that people started. Chica moved down first. That's what it was. It was like everybody started going.
Mm.
And because girl for a long time was like, I don't know, maybe 40% San Francisco, Oakland people. Mm. And then like the rest, 60% was all down in LA.
Mm-hmm.
We would like, at the time you could fly Southwest super cheap, Oakland to Burbank, and like under $100, I swear, round trip or something. So they would get us tickets every now and then. We'd come down, film, or they'd be working on skits and stuff. So that was always fun. So there was like a lot of back and forth. But then Chico got a girlfriend down here, and maybe from up there, but they moved down to LA. And so people were starting to kind of slowly migrate. Mike moved down there. Just a lot of us were going down there a lot. And I was like staying at either, we'd stay at Eric's house a lot right off Melrose. Eric and Barra had a house together.
Oh.
So we'd stay there. It was getting to the point where like I was down here for like 3 weeks out of the month, and I'd go home for like a month and then come right back and be down here for a while towards the tail end of college, sort of. And then I was just staying with people for a long time. I was trying to get a house with Scott and Dimitri. And then I eventually just got like, Rick was like, hey, if you get an apartment here, we'll pay like half your rent or something or whatever it was, you know? So that's like what I ended up doing. I got a place right across the street. It was like a house with Chico, Carol, and I think Tony Ferguson at the time.
Mm.
We all lived in this one kind of neighborhood. So, yeah. But I mean, when I was younger, I was like, I'll never live in LA. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Carol, like, they can offer me a movie deal or something. You know, then like you move down there just because like Carol and Chico moved down. your big boundaries change a little bit as you get older, I guess.
Yeah, everything changes. It's crazy. But like eventually you're in Burbank, right?
Yeah, that's quite a bit later though.
That's the outskirts. So it feels like your like zone.
It's like living in South.
Yeah.
It's like I'm right over the hill. Like if you went over the Hollywood sign.
Yep.
And went over the backside of it. Like I live right there, basically.
But when you move down there, how long is it before you start like going into the office and stuff?
Well, at that time, I was just strictly filming. So we would go to the offices to drop off tapes and digitize stuff. So I was just, I came down, I was working for Girl. I graduated college. I was doing that back and forth thing. Went like on a DC, went on those DC Europe trips. Like I missed my college graduation to go on like that DC tour, the super tour, they called it. Yeah. My first time to Europe.
Wow.
Like, yeah. Like Rick Hook, he was like, we gotta make a video, bring Aaron. He'll come. Like, you know. So that was my first time to Europe. It was like Ken Block
and like no way.
Those guys. Yeah. It was sick though. I mean, this is when DC was like Huff, Scott, Rudy. Oh. It was like that. Mike Carroll just got on.
Oh, okay.
So it was that kind of time. And I had been on some Girl tours across the US and I was like hyped on that. We went to Canada a couple times, Vancouver.
Sick.
So I was like itching to get to Europe. I remember Scott went on a DC tour to Australia and they're like, there's this big European tour. And I heard Rick telling them like, they should bring you. I was like really close with Scott at that time. And I was like so excited. So like I never went to those Europe contests, but I got to go on this. This is probably like 96 or 97.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I was hyped on that. And then, yeah, that's the era of just going back and forth. So when I finally came down to graduate college and started coming here a lot, I was just getting paid like as a filmer. So there was no CrailTap at that time or anything. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
And that led up to me going to, after the Chocolate Tour video came out, right after that, I started working for Skateboarder.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. How did that come about? Somebody reached out to you or did you?
That was through Ballard.
Oh.
Ballard, actually that same street I lived on across from Carol and Chico, like he lived down the street.
Ah.
And he was just starting to do Skateboarder with Sean Mortimer. And then Sean Mortimer left after, like Ballard was like, at the time he's a bit older than us. So he was like coming, he would go skate with us and shoot photos, but he would come to me. I think I was doing stuff for Slap a little bit already. Just occasionally, like I was really close with Lance. And so shot a couple of photos, would interview some people, wrote a couple of things. And I liked magazines a lot. And I was kind of like, oh, I'd like to do something like this. I was kind of getting bored of filming, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
And I was close with Ballard and he would show me layouts. Like, what do you think of this? What do you, you know, for some reason he trusted me in that way. And Sean Mortimer, after one issue, he went off, he quit to go do Tony Hawk's book, I think is what happened.
Okay.
And he's like, hey, Mortimer just quit. I want you to apply for the editor position. Like, I was like, honestly, right away in my head, I was like, yeah, I'm down to do that, you know? And so that's what I did for a few years after that. I had to go down and interview with some couple like publisher people at the like Surfer magazine building in like San Juan Capistrano down in Dana Point. So yeah, that was like my life after that. Yeah, it was a trip.
Did you have any interesting conversations with Jake in that time?
I'm sure he called me and was like, good luck. Well, I don't know. I can't remember, you know.
Skateboarder Mag, what are you doing, Mesa?
I'm sure there was something like that. Because we were pretty, I don't know. It's like close with Jake is different than being close with a lot of people, but we were like in contact all the way up at that time. He would call me to come skate the ramp every now and then, which is pretty weird. He just called me, come to the ramp today at 3.
Like, no way.
All right. I mean, I can drop in and do like some grinds. If
roll
that.
In, fucker.
Definitely was that roll. This was the ramp by Thrasher, though, not the Widowmaker.
Yeah, the one across the street.
Yeah. But I mean, sometimes I would show up and be like Joey, John. It'd be like a pretty heavy session. I think that's why he'd call me. He'd be like, oh, Aaron will dig this. You know, it's like sometimes he would make some really sweet gestures to me like that, where I felt like it felt like an honor almost. And one time I can't quite remember. I swear, I don't know. It might have been Jeff Grosso there one time.
Oh, really?
I can't remember. Somebody like a Vert, 80s Vert legend, where I was just like, dude, this is insane. I remember Coco being there.
Mm.
I didn't really know those guys at that time, to be honest. They were kind of like a different part of the city, you know? Like I respected them, obviously, but just didn't really kick it with them like that. But
yeah, they had Friday. It was like every Friday there was a session after work. And once that got rolling, there was some heated sessions.
Yeah. I remember that was kind of when I started like dipping in a little bit and being like, oh shit, you know, like Phil had just got on Think, and Think was right across the street, and Fish would go skate after work and that kind of stuff. And I was like, holy shit. You know, I think I saw Bob go in there, but we didn't even go in. No. Like, we're not cool enough, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it probably happened like, I probably went up there 3 or 4 times at the most, but over like a year or two. But yeah, he was just one of those dudes who would just call me up from time to time. So he even came by the skateboarder once or twice when we were like on Wilshire, and he would call me every now and then and like try to like, you know, give me like some kind of tough love. Like, why'd you mention Thrasher? He's like, I know you love the mag, but dude, never mention the competition, dude. Like, you never get stuff like that. I mean, he actually, I interviewed him for Skateboarder.
Oh.
And he did an inter- like a one-page interview thing of him just going off. Like, we did like an interview issue, and I gave him like, I was like, I want just like somebody interesting. Like, I think I can get Jake to do. I remember Dave Carney was like, I can't believe he let you do that interview. I was like, I mean.
And they ran out.
Yeah, yeah, I ran it. Yeah, yeah, for sure, for sure.
Right.
And he was just like, he's like, I don't want to do this for you, Aaron. Like, I won't do this for any other magazine. Like, you know what I mean? Which is like, what's he going to do for Transworld or Big Bird? We were fairly neutral in a way because, I don't know.
Yeah, it was different for sure than Transworld. Transworld was just like, no.
And like, to be honest, like, I didn't, like, the original Skateboarder is so before my time. Like, I was aware of it, and I knew people had this like affinity for it, but like for me, like I wasn't hung up on like it's got to be like the old Skateboarder for better or for worse. Like I just didn't, it was just I wasn't around for it, so I didn't have that like hanging over my head, so I could just kind of do whatever, you know. I wasn't like so hung up on like I gotta make it like how it used to be, because I didn't know how it was, you know. So I don't know, maybe that, I don't know if it being Skateboarder, I don't know if he was like, this is my chance to be a Skateboarder, but I kind of like, I don't know, I kind of separated the two eras pretty much.
Yeah. You want to take a quick piss break?
If you want to, I'm okay.
Yeah, I'm down.
Yeah, I'll just do
it. Hey, I got so much magic on my mind that I refuse to lose. This week, I have a new case of the Magic Mind Elixirs. Do more, stress less, focus as much as the next. That's right, kids, I'm still on this stuff, and I'm gonna take my daily shot right here. Like I keep telling you guys, this stuff's been a part of my daily regimen for over a month now, and I don't know. I feel like I'm being more productive. I definitely staying focused. I'm keeping my wife healthy when she's sick in the other room. I'm taking the dog all over the place, feeding it, you know. This is the focus potion that all of Silicon Valley is talking about. Magic Mind was designed for a long-term boost in energy, cognition, and stress management. It's not just a fleeting charge up. You'll start to feel the full effects after taking it consistently for 5 days with continued improvement through day 10. As you all should know by now, unless this is your first time listening to the podcast, January, the entire month, the good people at Magic Mind have come up with a special. For the entire month of January, you can get 1 month free of these Magic Mind elixirs when you subscribe for 3 months. Go to magicmind.com/Jan Schmidt, and with my code Schmidt20, you'll get an extra 20% off, which gets your grand total to a whopping 75% off. Again, this only lasts until the end of January, so we're running out of time. Hurry up before it goes away. That's magicmind.com/Jan Schmidt with the code Schmidt20. Get yours today and be prepared to have your mind on some magic and some magic on your mind.
Winner, winner, chicken dinner. I don't think so. Winner, winner, Sheen dinner.
All right. And now we have a winner. I almost forgot. I was so excited from the Niners winning and going to the NFC Championship next week. Bang Bang Niner Gang. According to Keith Meek, who is the official judge for this F-bomb contest, the correct answer was fucking 168.
Is that real?
And none of you fuckers could get it. So we're going with the closest. Drumroll, please. The winner of the complete Slasher skateboard from Santa Cruz Skateboards is... Parker, excuse my French, cochonnet. Email me your address and we'll get it out to you ASAP. Thank you to all that played. And I got another F-bomb contest coming here in a few episodes because I just did an interview with a guy that might have beat Keith Meek.
Winner.com.
Yo, yo, yo. SFC, what's up? Family? Dude, I'm so fucking hyped right now. It's insane. Let's get it.
This is Nasty Neck, and you're listening to Talking Smith. God damn it.
Yeah, the Crail Couch origin story. How does that go? How does that, like, all come to be? Is it just, like, we need a segment? And, like, how do you start? How do you put that together?
That was born out of... I mean, at that time, I was like, all right, I have to come up with all this stuff. There was no, like, let's have a meeting to talk about, we were just, like, doing it. Like, there's not a lot of thought going in. Try something, it doesn't really work, or just figure stuff out. And, I mean, Curl Tap, I mean, from the time I started working there, like, the internet is kind of, like, rapidly changing, too. So it's, like, at first, you can just put, like, a little megapixel video up. Like, you can, you know what I mean? You're kind of, like... stuck on like, oh, we can use
our first ones are like yeah. I think less than 320, maybe 160,
dude, seriously. So like stuff like that, 240 videos, 240p or whatever it was, like a lot of it's kind of based off of that. But I do remember at one point I actually was in a different office. I was like we were in cubicles, and Rudy Johnson was telling me the story of him convincing his wife, but his then girlfriend back in the 80s, to drop in on a mini ramp. And like Rudy can tell these really like funny, cool stories. And he just told this whole story about getting his wife to his wife, Pam, back in the days, like when they're in high school, to drop. He's like, I was telling her, like, dude, if you do this, you're going to be like one of five chicks who can do this in the whole world. Just the way he was telling this story. And I was just like, oh man, I should have filmed that. Like, I remember just thinking like, dude, I should have filmed that. Like, that would have been amazing. Like, and I remember just thinking like, oh, I should start filming these guys. And then I actually moved into it was a kitchen, and that was like kind of not being used. And they converted that into an office. And they gave me that office. It was like just much bigger. And they just threw this couch in there that used to be a Rick's office right across the way. And I think it was Lee Smith I did the first one with, even without a lav mic. It was like set up so perfectly where I could just be sat at my desk, have the camera just right there and pointed at the dude. And it just worked out. I eventually got a lav, and I don't know,
Lee Smith, first one.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
That's sick.
Yeah. Or you know what? I might have done something else in a different interview. I might have interviewed like Barra and Costin, because the game of skate thing was just starting to happen.
Oh.
And I would just ask them some questions about it. Like maybe, again, just with no lob, but that kind of same setup. And I think the format was just based off of like, I just want to be able to quick cut. I don't care if it's jump cutty and I don't want to hear my voice. I just want to put... title cards up. And right. I had used that song recently for like Four Star did like an art show, and I did like a time lapse of Mark and Brian doing a painting, and I used that song. I made a time lapse video. Yeah, and I just used that song to cut the time lapse to. And I remember it had like a real finite ending that I like, so I was just like, I remember that song just had a good feeling, and I think I could loop it to where we don't hear the lyrics and still have this kind of crescendo thing at the end that I liked. Uh-huh. I don't know if you remember, they all kind of ended with like the song would kind of actually kick in.
A funny feeling.
Yeah. So I was just like, I'll just use that song. It already kind of worked in this art show format. So,
did you use that the very first one?
Mm.
And then
I think once it was not the Bear and Eric thing, but once it was called the Crail Couch, I think I'm pretty positive it was
stayed that way.
Stayed that way the whole time. Yeah. And then once I had the timeline, I remember at one point I got pretty official with it. I was like, dude, I could, if they came in early enough, I could shoot one and probably post it that night if I had to, you know, or that by 5 o'clock. Cause I would just copy and paste the previous timeline, and I could just kind of work it out to where I would find my ending and just cut it all and just place the questions in. And just like, I would just have to trim a frame here, a frame there. Okay. I have to loop the song one more measure. And then I would have to, like, I'm either like 30 frames short or 30 frames over. So I just have to go into each shot and like, frame off here, frame off here, frame off there, frame there, until it kind of just lines up. And I was like, yeah. Right. Yeah.
Dude.
I could, at one point I was like, they would kind of come and go. And I was really like, not concerned with like every Thursday is this. I was kind of like anti that. Like sometimes I would have like three in a week and then none, and then two, 1 week. And then and they eventually slowed down quite a bit, but I was like, as soon as somebody came in, and then coincidentally, like right when I started doing them, we had like a chocolate team meeting or something, or not a team meeting, but like, hey, let's watch our footage for the video or something for Pretty Sweet. Like, let's get together and watch what everybody has. So I was just grabbing people like, come in, you know. And it was all also based off of like, a lot of people would come to Girl back then. So I didn't have to go to them. They would just come to Girl. So I'd just be like, here, hop in here real fast, you know?
Yeah.
And then eventually people would kind of like, hey, you want to come down and do one? They're like, sure, I'm down. Let's do it. Like, you know.
Was there something like that kind of inspired you, or did, like, was there something else, like somewhere like GQ doing something similar?
No, I don't think there was a lot of that kind of stuff back then, really. I don't think
Burn Dog loves it.
It is just, sometimes people be like, dude, somebody's biting the Crail Couch. But I was like, it's just an interview. Like, I don't know if you can fight it. Like,
yeah.
it's not a format you can really own, because I'm just interviewing somebody on camera. That's clearly existed before.
Yeah, but the quick cuts, like the question answer with the looping song and then the ending, ba-boom, you know, like that works. I mean, it's kind of the same format you use for the mini top five, right?
Yeah, that came after, I think. Roger Bagley helped me do that one, though, where I think I might have gave him the song and he looped it. But I was like, hey, we should do video versions of top fives. And he kind of just went and did one with Daniel Castillo. And then he would be out. He's like, hey, I'm out with Brophy. What do you got for him? I'll try to do a top five. And I'm like, oh, ask him top five, Australian skaters, whatever. You know what I mean?
Right.
Or he would just come back like, hey, I was with this dude. I just got one. I'm like, oh, cool.
And was Spike pretty much hands off? Like, was he only involved when it was the big production videos, or would you see him around from time to time?
I mean, mainly for the skits of the videos, video meetings, he'd come in from time to time for sure. But not a ton. I mean, you might even go like a year without coming to Girl, you know?
What was your favorite skit that you got to work on?
I mean, I was around for the mouse one. That was super fun. Actually, the first time I met Spike was when they were filming the intro for Goldfish in the city with Sheffy skating around the hills. Like, I was driving around. He would like be in the back of my Bronco 2, 86 Bronco 2.
Yeah.
And I would drive and he would film. We found he wanted to jump the car really bad.
Were you there when they jumped the car?
Yeah. And he was like, it was 2 days. I wasn't there the first day. And then the second day I met up with him, and it was me, Mike, Spike, and Rick at we met up at FTC, and then we just went out for the day. And that was the first time I think I seen like the Yashica T4, and they shot like the cover of the video.
Camera.
Yeah. They were just like, yeah, we're filming this skit. And they kind of explained the idea. And I was like, oh, amazing. This is cool. We were just cruising around. Oh, so anyways, he's like, I want to jump the car. And we were like, oh, Devonta, he for sure knows where, like, and sure enough, he was like, go to like Lake Street and like 30th or whatever. And like streets, like he knew exactly where it was, like where to go.
Sick.
Which I thought was pretty rad that he would know of all people.
The one where who is it? One of the Wilson brothers, and he's like the stunt double.
Yeah,
it's Wilson. Like Mike talking to him, and he's like, oh, that one is that so one was classic.
Awesome. I was there for that one. I was there for, yeah, I mean, obviously a Fully Flared intro.
Mm. Oh,
but yeah, right, the Cairo. Yeah. All that stuff. I mean, it was honestly like that stuff was always, I was there for the mouse intro. So those were always like really, you know, I went to film school and stuff. So like, I was like always super hyped to be, and to be clear, like I was just mostly, especially those early ones, just around like helping in little ways. Like it's, they just have like a little, they were super lo-fi, just like Spike with a little 16 millimeter camera, or even sometimes Rick filming stuff. So it was cool. Yeah. It was fun to be around. And it's like, it just felt like very creative in a way that like, maybe I wasn't all exposed to previously to be around. I mean, he was, and at, you know, at the same time he's making like a Beastie Boys video or.
Yeah.
So I mean, I was literally be sitting at home and some amazing video would come on and I would look at the end and be like, Spike Jonze. I'd be like, no way. That was like, sick.
I mean, the movies too, like,
yeah,
he's made some sick ones. You're like, damn. It's pretty amazing. He's a huge inspiration. Like him winning the award, everyone was all fired up doing screen grabs.
I went to his, one time I went to his house and went into his closet and saw it, took a photo with it was just like in his closet, like on a cubby.
So good.
Yeah, but he has this nice house like he bought like a long time ago. It's actually in the Chocolate Tour, some shots of it. It's like up in the Los Feliz Hills. So we would go up there for like little video meetings.
Mm.
And to, it was cool. Like even like the first, the day we did the mouse intro, he was working on his first movie that actually got like production stopped before he even started shooting. But he was supposed to, there's that Harold and the Purple Crayon. It was like a famous children's book. And he was developing, like he got hired to direct that, make a movie out of that, that children's book. This is before John Malkovich. And so he was like, he took us, it was like right where we were filming the mouse stuff. So we met there first and got Mike all dressed up in the In and Out costume. And he took us up into the production office and he had all these storyboards of like what that movie was going to look like, which was like super amazing to see. It was like this at the time, like the super interactive thing where like the kid was like coming out of the book and I, it was like to see all that stuff at a young age. It was like, it was super rad. Yeah. For sure.
Yeah, oh, that's amazing.
Yeah,
it's definitely kind of the pinnacle right there. Like when you leave there, is it, are you, have you done enough and you've got a good enough relationship with those guys that you can say I'm moving on, or was it kind of like, was it tough?
It was tough, but it went like as good as I could like hope for. So I was happy about that because I was very, I very much wanted to like not cause any like breakups in the friendship, you know. And because I was leaving to go work on some shows at Vice, I think it was like this, it wasn't like I was leaving to go, I don't know,
work for a competitor.
Yeah. So it was like,
and it, what, was, he went to Zero.
It was pretty strange because you know, I was basically leaving to work on shows for Viceland, and Spike was like the creative director of that channel. So my friends who were there, like unbeknownst to Spike, I was talking to them like, yeah, like maybe you want to try doing some of this stuff. And one of the women that I knew, they were like an executive producer who was going to launch all these shows, she was like, well, my boss says we have to talk to Spike, you have to tell Spike first because you're leaving his other company to like work at this other place where he's working. So we don't want to make it this, not that I was like some big player in the whole thing by any means, but like, it was just like, we don't want to like take somebody from his other company to come work for us. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
So I actually, which I probably would have always called Mike first, but because of that, I did call Spike first. I was like, hey, I've been talking to Chris and Lauren, who were my friends at Vice at the time. I think they want me to work on these shows they're going to do. And I just want to let you know. And he was like actually super great about it, which was like, felt really awesome, you know.
Lauren's King of the Road, right?
Yeah, she did Epically Later and King of the Road and like a lot of the food shows on Vice. She actually really helped develop Ethically Later, as she was the editor early on. So she kind of helped Patrick develop that whole, she did like the Cardiel episode and, you know,
Oh, wow.
Yeah, she was the editor, and she really helped shape it into like a more historical thing with, I'm sure Patrick obviously did too, but like, and this guy, Chris Grosso, they were.
I know Chris.
Yeah. So those are people that I knew, and they went on to do all these other shows, and they launched a lot of like food stuff on that network as well. But then so then from there, I went and talked to Mike and just went to his house, and I knew I just didn't want to like go into the office and be like, everybody come into the office, I got something to say. Like, I didn't want it to be like that.
But you went face to face.
I went to Mike's house. Yeah.
Sick.
And then, but then he and I say, like, I think I told him, like, don't tell Rick and Meg, but he told them. And then, so I didn't like, I just did it over the phone with, or they just called me like to talk, like, hey, it's all good, man. Like, we love you. You know, it was like, it was all really nice. So it was totally cool.
Yeah, I mean, you're the type of dude, you're not a shady dude. Like everyone knows, like, what your heart is. If you're doing something, you're doing it legit. It's not like some weird thing.
But there was a lot of people who had left, coincidentally, around that time. So it was kind of a tumultuous time. So I wanted it to be like, kind of like easy as can be, you know?
Right. Yeah. We need your first impression of Tim McKenney, because I know you've known him a long time, and he was like, you got to ask Meza, what made him the guy who actually cared and would check on his homies when most wouldn't give 2 cents? You know, he's like, fuck it. He's like, he calls me and that matters.
Dude, I need my Talking Schmidt, man.
It's funny because I knew of Tim for I don't know. It's just that time where like things aren't moving around a lot, and like connecting with people is a little bit harder in the 80s. So.
And now another first impression with Aaron Meza.
There was like this kid in San Mateo that was like little and supposedly like really good, you know what I mean? And my friends were more his age, so I think they interacted with him a little bit more. And we just heard of like, there's this kid, he's like super good, he's in San Mateo, like, but they were like, he's super hyper, like he's a maniac. And we knew who Crouch was too a little bit, right? Jason Crouch. And they were like, they were kind of almost like, they were like maybe too, like even when I first met Jason, I mean, I like him and it was cool. But at first I was like, man, he's like a lot. You know, it's funny. And the first couple of times I was around Tim, like went up to his house, like pick him up. He like, I think his parents were home, but he's like, dude, check these out. Like went into his mom's bedroom and like showed us these like kind of like, you know, those like glamour shots you get. Like some girl, you know, gets like hires, like you go to one of those studios and get like weird, like kind of sexy camera shots. But he was showing them to us of his mom. Like, you know, I mean, they were like super, I mean, they weren't like nudity or anything, but they were like, he was like, check this out, check out my mom's. We were just dying. I just thought that was like next level to be like some dude you kind of just met, like, check out these, like these photos of my mom, like with a boa on and like soft. I was like, damn, dude, put his mom out there like that. But it was like super, like kind of innocent and funny too, though. You know what I mean? I'm sure he was like had a good relationship with his mom, but it was just like, damn. Like something that you would just like, my friends would come over, hide the photos. You know, that he was just like, here they are, check it out. It was so funny.
He disappeared for a while. He fell off radar, stopped skating. He was all bummed on life. And then I think you called him and somehow worked out some video with like your friend's band maybe and footage of him or something like that.
Yeah, a friend that this guy, Mark Bianchi, grew up skating with. He actually lived in San Mateo. He lived off the 92, but he was like a really close friend of mine. Around college, we kind of like, he kind of went into music. He started playing music and he kind of went that direction. And he actually started this band called Her Space Holiday, which I think was like a pretty decent size indie band. I didn't even realize it until like years later. Actually, I saw Crouch, I think, and he was like, dude, Mark's in a band. They like put records out and stuff, which was cool. Cause when the last kind of contact I had with him, he was playing in a band with friends and stuff. So, but anyways, like, so we kind of like reconnected here and there. And then, years ago, he was like, hey, I haven't put out a record for a long time, but I'm putting something out and I want to make a video for this one song. And I want to take all the old footage that we used to have just with Danny's camera, just fooling around, skating the ramp and stuff. And it was like all of our neighborhood friends. And Tim was in there at that time, but he was like, hey, could you just Mark was like, could you just call all of them and just say, hey, you're going to be in this video, just so they don't like trip out, you know? So it was kind of cool, because I had like, it was like maybe five or six people I hadn't talked to like in 20 years, you know? And maybe Tim, like a little bit more, maybe his was not as long ago, but I just called him up and be like, hey, man, like, what's going on? Like, Mark's putting out a song and he wants me to use this footage. And like, Tim was like, what does he think? I'm going to sue him or something? I don't get why are you even asking me? And I was like, I don't know. He's just trying to be safe. But we, you know, I mean, with each person I called, like, we caught up on like, what are you up to? I'm doing this. You're doing that. Cool. That's rad. And I think Tim was like fishing a lot. And they, if I have this right, you might know more than me. He was like, I have a board, but I don't. Did he have a longboard? Or maybe he had a cruiser or something. I can't remember what it was.
I never stopped skating.
I mean, I don't know. He hypes it up that like I said something to.
Yeah.
Or maybe he had a cruiser and I was like, why don't you just get a regular board then? Like, and I guess he just went and did it. I don't know. Like, it was something that like.
Something snapped.
And I think it was more him. More him being hyped. And it wasn't like, I wasn't like, dude, what are you doing? You got to skate. Cause like, I wouldn't have, I mean, I'd hardly skate myself. So I was just like, I mean, shit, like just get another board if you want to do it. And I think he just did. And like, that was kind of the jump off on it.
Mm. We love you, Tim.
Yeah. I actually really enjoy just some of the stuff on this, on your podcast here. Like just sometimes it's the way he like, I don't know, like there's something about like Jake used to have it too, where like they're so spirited in the way they say it. You just like, I'll rewind it a couple times just to hear like a certain word, like, damn, dude, like he's so like.
A lot happy. Of emotion. Yeah. He wears it on his sleeves, you know? Yeah. We go out skating for fun. Like we're old. He's out of the thing for a long time. He still has the I have to film the best shit ever mentality. We can't go do slappies or something. He's like, we're skating a curb, dude. I need to. I'm like, dude, well, let's just go have fun. Like, you know? He's like, I'm cursed. I need to, like, let's go to Greer. I'm going to get a switch nose blunt. I'm like, what?
Right. I mean, he was really good even as a kid. And then he was like better than all of us for sure. And then, but even before he got on Think, I felt like he kind of went like, I wasn't seeing him around that much. And all of a sudden he just, boom, he was on Think and you're like, oh man, like, cool. I kind of felt like they found him. Yeah. He's probably just like in San Mateo, Redwood City, or just skating down there. Cause he would come to the city, like in skating Barcadero and stuff. Mm-hmm. And he kind of just went quiet on it a little bit. Yeah. But I'm sure he was always skating, but just doing his own thing.
You better leave this shit in here. Don't be, this is negative or not. This is life.
What's going on now? Because that's what I don't really know. Like, you work for Nike, but like, what's your...
I mean, I mostly just, I work like in the, like, because Nike's more like organized, like a big company. So it's like, I work with the marketing department, but I'm kind of like the in-house, like video. I mean, my title is like video producer or content producer. So I just help, like we have a lot of video projects and they didn't have anybody here to like oversee them basically.
Oh.
So for the most part, I'm just like, I mean, just things I help make from time to time. But sometimes I'm like, hey, we need to hire somebody to like, we have a shoot. It's all like kind of project based by like shoe release for the most part for us. So
you're kind of like a producer, like overseeing the project.
Yeah. But in skateboarding, so we know how that can be like a gray term.
But it like, seems like you get to go on trips occasionally. Sometimes, too.
Yeah. Like I'll go on trips once in a while. I mean, not like I used to, but. It actually started because I was, after Vice, I was doing more freelance stuff. And my friend Herschel was like, hey, it was coming up on like 10 years of Stephon Shoe. They're like, hey, we want you to like, could you do like a pitch to make a doc for him? So I had to come up with like a pitch idea. But he was like, hey, like, we actually just need somebody to oversee all these projects because we have all this stuff coming in and there's nobody here to really like just focus on that. So that's like, instead of like just directing that piece, we want you just to come in and we're going to create this job for you to do. And that's kind of just how it happened. So yeah, I just like help. Sometimes I help edit a little bit or give notes on videos that come in or help when they're more like a storytelling thing. Like it's with this collaborator, who are they? Like I hire somebody to direct like a little kind of short doc piece and I work with them on like, hey, it's got to cover this stuff. And it's kind of all over the place. I mean, it could range from anything from like, here's some phone clips to like, here's kind of a more big shoot thing. But yeah.
So is it, are you pretty much working with some of the bigger budgets that you've worked with?
It's bigger budgets. I mean, when I worked at Girl and stuff, I wasn't really privy to like, maybe just go do it.
Yeah.
I didn't know like what the budget was more or less, but yeah, I mean, there's obviously there's more money in a shoe company than a board company.
Right.
But it's not like, do whatever you want. Here's $1 million. It's not like that. Uh-huh. It's like, here's the money for this. It's very seasonal based. So it's like, here's the money and this is how it breaks out. Do you have X amount of shoes coming out? How are you going to divide that and do what you need? I mean, sometimes I have to hire a photographer too. And like, so it's like, it's a kind of a group effort, but it's like, here's the five projects for the season. We have this much money. This one's going to get this amount. This one's that amount, so on and so forth. And then we decide, okay, this is how we're going to do this video. We're going to hire this guy to film. It's his friend. Have him film it, blah, blah, blah. And then sometimes, you know, there's like a Europe crew too, that they're like, hey, they're making a video in Europe. You help them get the music. You tell them like when it needs to come out. I don't know. It's kind of, it's a lot of managing, to be honest. And some creative stuff too, but yeah.
But it affords you the opportunity to go to Hawaii once a year?
That was maybe every 2 years.
That's my new goal, is to try to go every year. I mean, again.
We've gone twice, but yeah, I don't know if it's a year we got it like that.
Well, let's end with a couple mini top fives. The first one being podcasts.
I like that Smart List podcast. I don't know if you heard that. I like when they just like bag on each other. It's like my favorite. A lot of podcasts is, for me, is like really predicated on if I like the guest or not. If it's like somebody I never heard of, I'm just like, yeah, whatever. I listen to that. I listen to The Daily sometimes if it's like a topic that whatever I'm interested in. Little Talking Schmidt here and there.
Talking Schmidt, dude!
Nine Club I'll do if it's like, again, if it's like somebody that's like usually an older person that has like crosses the history that I'm like interested in. WTF, same thing. Like if it's somebody that I know who it is. At first, when I first got into the podcast, I was really into like heavy metal podcasts. I just, the Don Dokken interview or something. Just
yeah.
Like, that kind of goes back to like my beginning of podcasts, is actually all like mostly like old metal stuff that I was like, oh, I want to hear what they're up to now, or just hear the old war stories. So it was like, A lot of them aren't even around anymore, but it was like Eddie Trunk is still around, but again, it has to be somebody that crosses my timeline and like somebody that I'm interested in. But
did you read David Lee Ross' book?
I read that one a long time. Yeah, The Face from the Heat. Yeah. There was we were going to the library a lot just to get children's books for my kids in the beginning, because we would just kind of cycle through them fast. And I would read almost every autobiography. Some gnarly ones that I read, like Sammy Hagar. I would read all of them.
The Motley Crue one's good too.
Read all the Guns and the Motley Crue one was like, actually, that was like a long time ago, but that one was like for sure crazy page turn. Even Carol read that one. He's like, I mean, Carol, I'm not putting him out there, but he don't read books. You know, he was like, dude, I was like waking up like excited to read, you know. I couldn't believe it. Like, you know, he was a crazy Motley Crue head as a kid. He convinced his mom to buy him. He's 2 years younger than me, so he was probably like in third or fourth grade when they were really like coming out.
Right.
And he convinced his mom to buy him a bottle of Jack Daniels just to put up on the like shelf as some decoration for the room, because he was just so hyped on it.
What about the Hawaii one that you were telling me about? Like, it's like, was it horror story or something?
It was I haven't listened to it for a while, so I kind of forgot. Oh, what school you went? That one. It's like super local Hawaiian.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, yeah.
What about top five concerts that you were at?
I mean, I saw a Kiss concert when I was super young, like in kindergarten. We went to like when Kiss was like blowing up.
But where?
Like,
Cow Palace?
Cow Palace, yeah. Dynasty Tour. I mean, honestly, like I was like five. And like we like, but it was like going to the circus. Like, you know what I mean? It was just like a show.
You got an older sibling?
I have a brother who's like 4 years older. So my mom took us to, and like some neighborhood kids, to the Cow Palace. But it was like the Kiss Mania, like sick. Kiss meets the Phantom. Like we had board games and lunch boxes. So it was like, it was pretty tame, but it was like, I couldn't, I mean, that was like, you know, it was full on like you know, the laser coming out of Ace Frehley's guitar, the blood, all that. I mean, it was just a shit. I probably knew like three songs or something, you know what I mean? But that was super rad. Scorpions to the Cow Palace was probably the next concert I went to after that. That's one where I was like, hey, I want to go to the, I was like in fifth grade and I was like, hey, I really want to go to this concert. Like begged my mom to take me and my brother and our friend Mike. And it was funny, Bon Jovi was like the opening band. I went to Day on the Green where Metallica played. Scorpions actually headlined that. That was the summer of like the transition from heavy metal to like thrash metal, Metallica, Megadeth, Anthrax and all that stuff. So it was kind of this, we just wanted to see Metallica super bad. It was even before Master of Puppets hadn't even come out yet. It was the summer we kind of discovered them. Ride of Lightning was already out though. And that was like a big ordeal to get my parents to let us go to Oakland. Like there's this Catholic family that we were friends with that had like seven kids. Like the friends our age, my mom convinced their like way older sister to take us. But it was cool because like later on, like discovering Carol was like a metalhead. Like we were at shows together he was at that show. You know, I don't know. We weren't even skating yet. Either one of us. They caught the Night's Doctor that day too. Actually, it was like, it's like my mom's birthday also. I was like,
no way.
I saw Maiden at the Cow Palace, Maiden the Twisted Sister. He was at that one. That's a Power Slave era. But that's the Live After Death is that tour. But he was there. And then I went to a Dio show at the Cow Palace and he was at that one also. It was pretty sick to like discover that.
That's my wife's favorite. She's like, Rainbow in the Dark.
My first club show was Anthrax at the Stone on Spreading the Disease tour. That was definitely up there because it was my first club show. Like I was like, you know, I'm used to the Coliseum or the Cow Palace where it's like, they're just like a little dot on the stage. You know what I mean? I'm not even in the front cause I'm too little. I can't go up there. You know what I mean? So this was like the Stone where I was like, dude, I'm standing right in front of them, right in front of the singer, you know, like this is crazy. I couldn't believe it. But even more so it was like, so this band, it's like Legacy was opening. They were Testament before Testament. It was called Legacy. I didn't know who they were, but they were a Bay Area band. So they were the opener. But before the show, dude, Scott Ian was just standing right there, like before the show. Like to me, that I didn't realize like, oh, this is a different, like more underground thing. Like I was still used to like the huge pedestal, right? So I couldn't believe he was just like standing there like no big deal. And like I went up to him like, no way, like I love you guys, like, you know what I mean? Like I didn't realize like, oh, this is a club show, this is how it is now. It's not gonna be like super rock star now. It's like they're just like normal guys in jeans, whatever, you know what I mean? So that was pretty rad just to like be in a show where you're just like up front and like, you know, it's just so intimate, you know. It was like blowing my mind. I was like in seventh grade. I was just like, wow, that's crazy.
I know, we saw Beastie Boys at the Stone. It was like a License to Ill tour. Oh, and it really? Was so like you said, you're in a small room kind of like comparatively, and you're like, holy shit.
I mean, the show before that was probably the Coliseum, Open Coliseum. So it's like night and day, clearly.
Oh my God. I just got a text from McKinney because I told him I was going to interview you today. And he said, dude, you just fucked me up. Heavy one. Let me know. Hold on. I need two stories about Tom, that's Chessie Manini, and my cousin Jeremy Castleberry.
Was he cousin Jeremy?
That's what he said. I'm not sure.
Yeah, we had our friend Tom. He was my age. We went to junior high together. He was hilarious. And then his friend Jeremy was actually a really good skater, his cousin. And him.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Was he lived in your city?
They're San Bruno. Tom was South City, but Jeremy was San Bruno.
A little softer down there. Hey, it wasn't soft in Redwood City, though.
Because I've never done it. Depends on what side of the community you're on, too, as you know.
I want a caveat disclaimer. Redwood City is not soft.
What side of the El Camino? Are you on the west side or the east side?
Oh, I was in San Carlos. It was as soft as it gets. It was like fucking wonderful.
What side of the El Camino?
Dude, so far. Like, I was almost to the coast.
You almost on Judy Becerra? Up on 280?
I was almost at 280, yeah.
You're in the Flintstone house, huh?
Yeah, you mentioned Carol being at concerts that you were at. It's funny because I'm pretty positive. You might ask him, but my first rave I ever went to, I'm pretty sure he was there. It was at this like outdoor mini golf place like north of the Golden Gate Bridge. And I remember, like, it was insane. And I think I saw him and maybe Greg and Keith.
They were into it. Yeah, those guys were all into that. Yeah,
the rave days were nuts. My roommates were hella into it.
That one.
Yeah.
They were so, like, you'd come to Barcadale the next day, there's like laying in the bushes. You're like, oh, gosh, look at these guys. I haven't even slept yet.
The last one I was thinking, I know this is tough, but like first things that come to mind is like things that you filmed.
I mean, the one thing that comes to mind for sure is Henry's fakie 5-0, fakie flip at a Barcadero on that weird like ledge kind of on top of the three. Costin's back nose blunt at Hubba for sure. Mike, I filmed his like that kickflip nose wheelie to nollie heel out at a Barcadero. It was like a 401 opener. He just kickflip nose wheelie to nollie heel out, which I had never been done before, I'm sure. Another Henry line, he did like a switch nose slide, a switch crook. He comes around the kind of corner by the stage of like a 180 nose grind, 180 out, and then pushes all the way to the bottom of the big three and does a kickflip nose slide. But like those two second last tricks were like first try after. Once he made the first ledge trick, he did the rest of it first try, which was like, I mean, I didn't know where he was going. I'm just like, all right, just chase this dude down. And he kicked from nose slide fakie at that time. Like pretty much anything I filmed with him and Tim Henry was insane. I filmed like, yeah, I'm trying to think. I was there like Danny Wade did like the first high air down like close to Mexico, that first iteration where he jumped out of the helicopter. Cause I was like kind of in the DC orbit through Rick and stuff. Me, Rick and Eric. Eric was still on S at that time, but for some reason he came with us.
Wait, that's not the one that Sturt sniped, is it?
It is that one.
Oh my, dude, yeah. That's one of the best stories of all time. Yeah. I was at Thrasher when that happened because I remember Jake got off the phone and he was like, we're getting, like, and I was like, this is insane.
I remember we would go to Hollywood Billiards pool hall a lot off market. Remember that spot?
Uh-huh.
Upstairs, and Dawes Bird was working for PC at the time, and he was kind of arguing with Lance about, like, even though Lance had nothing to do with it, but he was just like a high speed employee. And Bird's like, I can't believe we spent all that money and this guy's just selling you guys the photos and blah, blah, blah. You know what I mean? It was kind of funny. And Lance was like, whatever, dude. It's like, it's going to be a great story, though. It's probably better off. Like, you know what I mean? It's just like more, you know, publicity kind of thing.
Oh my God. Yeah. That was
pretty funny. But yeah, we went down, like, Rick just picked us up. Like, we got to wake up early and get down there for this thing Danny's doing. I didn't even know Danny, but he was pretty sick just to see that. I think what else? He almost did the 900 that day, actually, or he spun one.
Whoa.
It was weird because like we went down there, he was like, he's going to do a high air, right? So he does a high air, and then he started doing like some, like, you know, like a kickflip indie that was like whatever, 12 feet out, or I can't remember what it was, 9-10 feet out. And then he did the helicopter thing, and then... And it's funny because there was probably like seven photographers. Every transfer photographer they had was there. So it's funny that Stuart also was
there. I mean.
And then he kind of just, I saw him like kind of spin a one or two 900s maybe. But like, I don't know. To me, it looked kind of, I was just like, in my head, I was like, oh, he's just going to do this now. Like, no problem. But it was kind of the end of the day. So he just stopped. I don't know. Maybe he was just tired. But I thought for sure he was like, oh. He's just checking them off one by one, but I don't know, he probably just spun it like he didn't like put it down or anything, but. Even when skateboarding got big, like a lot of the people I were with wasn't really like doing the biggest rails. I kind of was just in a different scene. So it was like kind of more like intricate stuff.
Do you get something cool with Mariano?
More like in fully flared. I filmed with Brian a little bit at Mouse, but nothing got used. That was all Dowling.
I love those videos you guys would make on your tours. Like there's a lot of good shit would come out. Like, you know, those tours where you would put them on the crail like afterwards. Yeah, yeah. And it would just be like...
Yeah. Yeah, so much. I kind of became more doing that more so, and then while Ty was out doing like the other videos after a while
in the streets.
Yeah, yeah.
All right.
So that was kind of fun. You just kind of, it's like more like laid back, so you can kind of have more fun with it too. So that was cool.
Did you guys ever skate the gazebo banks?
I skated there once. It's kind of like a China Banks kind of transition, right?
It was like wooden, a gazebo, and it had a little metal coping around the top. I'm pretty sure Mike and Henry showed up there one day, and McKinney always talks about that. Like, those guys fucking killed that spot. Like,
that's another spot again where I was just like, I don't know how we heard about this thing and we just found it.
I think it was Redwood Shores.
Yeah, it's like on the water almost, right?
Yeah.
You got to kind of hop around the side of it.
And you could just go in circles and hit the bank,
It was kind of hard to skate too, a little bit though, right?
Yeah.
It was tight.
It wasn't like perfect training. It was like a little whoom.
We're just doing like little kick turns on it, I'm sure, yeah.
Did you ever skate Bryce's 43?
I did get to skate Bryce's through Dan Parks because he knew Jim a little bit. So I probably skated like two or three times.
Damn, I never went there.
I was pretty hyped on that. And the vert ramp was there too, so we skated the vert a little bit.
Rad.
We'd go to San Jose when it was like the skate park, not the original one.
The Kennedy Warehouse?
But the one that came after where it was like the
skate. Oh, like everything.
Yeah, it was public street course and stuff. So that was like, I mean, we were like thirsty. We wanted to skate vert ramps, but we just didn't have that access, you know. There was one in San Mateo. I think I told you about, but I don't know if you ever remembered it. It was like off of like maybe third, like right when you come out of the trees of Burlingame and then like San Mateo opens up.
Jesus.
Off to the right there, some guy named Bosworth had a ramp.
Like, yeah. I think they called it Bozzy's.
Yeah. That was the first vert ramp we went to. We just heard about this kid who went to college, but his parents would let people skate it or something.
No way. Okay.
We were just pumping from the bottom. We didn't even know. Like, I didn't even know how to pump. Like, I just thought like the trajectory of the ramp was going to carry me up. I would get on my board and be like, how come I'm not going higher? I don't get it. And they were like, you got to gyrate. They would call it gyrating for pumping. They're like, you got to gyrate. I didn't know. I just had no clue. I thought it just the ramp did all the work. Even though we were just like walking up as high as we could and stepping onto the board. I was like, I'm just out of speed already. We were just so clueless. We'd go to the pit early on. I got to go to.
Oh, did you ever see Cooksey skate there?
I don't think I ever saw Cooksey. A lot of the ghost skate guys we would see there. Alcatar and his brother. And you guys all had those little red wheels.
Oh, yeah. Remember the garbage can wheels.
Dude, that was like, we were tripping. We were just like, that place was, you know, we were just like. Like if you had regular wheels.
Yeah,
like,
it was super rough. So we got so these soft wheels that they were for putting on the bottom of garbage cans that you would wheel out.
Yeah.
And I think Larry maybe or Chad, one of those two guys was like, dude, these would be perfect for Devil's Pit. And so we started riding them. I was like, oh my God.
And they were red, right?
Yeah, they were red.
Yeah. We were like, what are these wheels? Like, I mean, I think we even heard they're from garbage cans or something. We were just like, again, like off in the corner. They were like doing airs and backside bullets and stuff. We were just like, we would maybe rock and roll.
That place was hard.
Now I think about like that wooden roll in, like we used to roll into. There's so many like cracks and spaces in it. Like,
yeah.
I mean, it was like so rough. But that's where I actually learned to like carve the corners and stuff eventually. I eventually made it to where I actually kick turn over that pipe that Mickey has that photo on.
Yeah.
At down the far end where it was all collapsed down.
That's like, a sick photo.
I figured out a way to like hit the two. I'm regular foot. It's like I hit the two corners and make it down there. But that's kind of where I learned how to pump a corner because, you know, we didn't have any, you know, where were you going to have a corner to carve around in back then, you know?
Yeah.
That stuff was not around. Yeah. And then the spillway, we talked about I can't believe I missed the spillway.
You didn't?
Because we went to...
That was the first place I went to. I bought my skateboard at Go Skate, and they were like, go to this spot. So I just went up there, and I was like, kind of like how you described, just like a little kid in the corner going, there's people are drinking beer and smoking.
Dude, there was a... But we got to CSN Ditch early on, which that seemed like... It was so downhill, it seemed like almost impossible to skate. But we kind of skated that a few times. And I think in my head, I thought that was the spillway. So when people were like, have you been to the spillway? I thought that was the CSM ditch off the 92. So I was like,
oh, it was?
That's I thought it was. But I confused them. So I never actually made it. So like somebody at Ghost Gate was probably telling me to go up there. But I was just like, oh, yeah, I've already been there. But I had it mixed up, you know.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was so many, like, it seemed like back then, I mean, Sneath was completely different than it is now, but we found that, and like, there was this one that was in off 280 that's like, when you're taking the off ramp, in between, there was like a half pipe. I got a photo of Alcantar doing like a wall ride.
Yeah, it was like we tried to skate that one time too, but it was so downhill also that it was, we couldn't deal with it. But I remember you showed me that photo. I couldn't believe that he was doing the wall right there.
Yeah, those guys were really good. I was like, damn.
but when we first skated Sneath too, like what was cool was like, it was like a big kind of bowl kind of thing. Then like you'd kind of go down it like a snake run, right? Like derby almost, the way it tapered off.
Mm-hmm.
And like that fence got put in, but before that, that was like the whole thing was to go like
exactly like towards the golf, the drive range. Yeah.
Yeah. That was sick.
So, true or false, you filmed a clip of Phil Shao in my backyard.
I did. You want true or false? How bad do you want that connection?
So bad.
Were you there that day?
I want the tape. No.
Yeah.
But I got this. I got the photo. Right? I think Lance or somebody had a photo in Slap and you're at the bottom filming.
Yeah. It was frontside nose grind.
Uh-huh. Low to high on the pool.
Mike had the venture ad, Japan grab.
Yeah. Dude, Mike ripped our ramp. Like, we used to see Mike at this other ramp called Mookie's in Palo Alto. One time we were skating it and these guys climbing over the fence the other way, like coming in from some weird way. We used to just come in the side gate, but they were coming over like from the creek or something. And we're like, holy shit, it's Mike Carroll. And we're like, what? Like, I knew he could skate jump ramps because I'd seen him at Golden Gate Park. Right. But then he's doing salad grinds and the mutes. And we're like, dude, this guy rips ramp too.
Because he had a mini ramp in his backyard at one point.
Oh, he did?
Yeah. You remember that photo? It was like a spread and thrasher where Cooksey's doing like the undercoping, like three wheel thing.
Yeah.
So I think that ramp was close to his house, maybe. And they got that after that ramp had to get moved. They might have got it and cut it down to a mini ramp because that's, I actually never skated, but you could tell like in the HE videos and stuff, it's like really slow. It's like really slow transitions because it was just a vert ramp without the vert, you know? So it had those long transitions. Yeah. I'm pretty sure it was that ramp.
Yeah. Well, maybe we can just say that the Phil Shao documentary won't be done until you get me that clip.
I mean, that thing, I don't know.
No, you know what? I put a feeler out because somebody at 411 might be looking through some shit.
Yeah.
So that's where you said it probably is, right?
Yeah. I'm almost positive, man. Back then, it was just like a mess of like, here's the tape, like no sense of like making a copy or anything.
But you guys would come skate the ramp once in a while, right? You were there more than once.
Yeah. You know what's funny? I went down there one time with, I'm pretty sure, like Justin Pierce and Harold.
Really?
They sure skated that ramp.
Huh.
I was positive with Dawes and maybe like Ali Asha.
Dawes used to come down all the time.
Yeah, I think every time I went there, it was with Dawes.
Yeah, they had like a center or a two-page spread of like Liversedge, I think maybe Matt Pales or Pastris. There was a bunch of dudes.
Yeah.
And Phil had the cover.
Press that Ali?
Yeah, frontside ollie, that slap cover, that was our backyard.
With a red sweater, maybe?
I was there!
Those are the times. Yeah. Well, dude, I appreciate this, man. Just finally made it happen.
Yeah. Zoom.
Enjoy your Sunday, dude. Bang, all bang, right. Niner gang.
Yeah.
All right, we'll talk to you soon.
Okay, peace.
Later.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Blood Wizard. Blood Wizard.
Blood Wizard.
Blood Wizard!
Shop.bloodwizard.com.
Tickety-tack.
Hey, it's Corey at Blue Plate, 3218 Mission Street. Come see us. Meatloaf, fried chicken, deviled eggs, Dollar Olympia beers. We're here every day of the week. We got a garden, and we got smiles on our faces. Come let us make you happy.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Talking Schmidt. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes, Anchor, Spotify, or anywhere you get your podcasts. When you subscribe, you'll get notifications every Tuesday of new episodes the minute they become available. Also, please leave reviews and a 5-star rating. It's the best way to help the show grow. All of the episodes will always remain free, but if you would like to help support the show, you can do so at talkingschmidt.com, where you can pick up some merchandise like t-shirts, beanies, hats, and stickers. The website has an entire archive of all of the episodes, with extra photos and videos. Email us with any suggestions, comments, or ways that the show may have improved your life at talkingschmidt@gmail.com. All interviews are conducted, edited, and produced by Schmitty. The intro music is Mary's Cross by the band Nature. A very special shout out goes to the executive director, Cheryl Camisa.
Shout out.
Love it!
This is Talking Schmidt, where the Rolodex is deep, but the conversation is deeper.
Keep the wheels greased.